we're going to chat some Ralf Rangnick, because I think it's fair to say, as he still awaits his work visa and Michael Carrick will be in the Manchester United dugout for Thursday's game against Arsenal, I think it's fair to say a lot has been said about Rangnick. His methods, his philosophy, his personality, be that in the media or some of his disciples like Thomas Tuchel and Jurgen Klopp. So there have been a queue of admirers for Ralf Rangnick. To tell us more, we have the great Uli Hesse with us, German football journalist and author. Waiting patiently there. Uli, good evening.
Good evening. Well, can we say any more about Ralf Rangnick, Joe? We'll find out.
I mean, it's the second coming. I mean, he's a messiah if you read everything that's written about him. He's been given quite the billing over here in, the UK media, which we would follow very closely as well. I mean, the godfather of gegenpressing, amongst other things. I mean, I kind of think of Jack Charlton Irish teams being a precursor to gegenpressing. So he's credited with the man who pioneered gegenpressing. How factual is that, Uli?
Well, it's not totally wrong. I sometimes appear on this show because of my book, I suppose, because one of my books, which is about the history of German football. And at the beginning of this month, I've updated it. You know, there will be a new edition. So I updated it to cover the last 7 years, I think. No, 8 years. And so I added a new chapter. And in so doing, that was way before the managerial crisis at United. Well, not way before. I said to myself, hang on, suddenly this Ralf Rangnick guy is turning into a central figure of the entire tale. And this is a man who has won, well, I don't want to say a measly cup with Schalke, but it was, you know, against a second division team. He didn't even lead the team to the final. So a man who's only, you know, has this one piece of silverware suddenly turning into a central figure of the book. And there's a reason for that, of course. He really is influential, has been, yeah.
Well, tell us a bit more about him then. So, I can give the factual basic, 63 years of age. He did start coaching very, very young at the age of 25 in 1983. And you look at his CV, he really has been managing pretty much continually since then. And look, that includes things like managing the Stuttgart under-19s in the 90s. So it's not all at a super elite level. But effectively, since the mid-1980s, he has not gone very long without managing somebody.
Yeah, and well, he came to national prominence, actually, which is why he makes his first appearance in my book, in the current edition, in the late 90s, when he was coaching second division Ulm. Very, very unfashionable club, very, very small club. But he was doing it with some, at the time, revolutionary tactics, or we thought they were revolutionary. And he makes that appearance in my book because it was really a central moment of, you know, right before the turn of the century, before we totally overhauled how we train football, how we teach it, how we think about it. His TV appearance was really an important moment because hardly anyone really knew him. He appeared on a sports show and he was asked to explain what we today think of as, well, quite normal stuff, you know, zonal marking and pressing and all these things. And he did it quite well. And there was a backlash, because a lot of people felt that, you know, he had no right being there, you know, as a virtual nobody. And some of the older coaches felt that, you know, he was punching above his weight a bit, you know, being a bit too smart for his own good, making the older coaches look bad. There was a very bad quote from the national manager about him. So he sort of acquired a professor image, you know. And it took him a while to live that down, that sort of reputation as a smart aleck, if you will.
Okay. So there's a parallel there with Jurgen Klopp almost, that he caught attention as a brilliant pundit, it seems then, as well.
Yeah, in a way. Rangnick always said that he had his epiphany in the mid-80s. I think it was around 1985 when he was player manager at a really small club. Basically his hometown club. And it was an amateur club. And they were playing a friendly against Valery Lobanovsky's Dynamo Kiev. And Rangnick always told the story of, well, of course they were much better than his team, but he always wondered, why do these guys have 13 players on the pitch without the referee stopping the game until he realized, hang on, they're playing with 11 men. Just like we do, it just seems as if they have more men on the pitch. So he then started studying these. He always, you know, he always would tell stories about how he, back at the time, you know, which was not easy, I was trying to acquire videotapes, you know, VHS cassettes of Dynamo Kiev games, you know, just to study how they were doing it. And yes, he's been, so he's a bit older than Klopp, I think. So he's sort of, yeah, but he's roughly from the same school, you know, that Southern German school of modern football tactics.
Okay. I just want to play you a short clip here of Rangnick. So here he is. He's chatting to Dave Jones, who's a presenter over here on Sky Sports. He's chatting to Dave Jones about his coaching philosophy. This was on The Coach's Voice. So here's Rangnick explaining recently what he's all about. Have a listen.
It's about putting the other team under pressure, no matter if it's high up, the higher up, the better. But wherever the ball is, we try to win the ball back. And we also found out that it's not only about where we win the ball back. Obviously, the higher up we win the ball back, the closer the distance to the other team's goal, keeper and goal. And the higher up we win the ball, the less players the other team have at that very moment behind the ball to prevent us from creating a chance or to score. But we also found out that it's not only about the location where we win the ball, it's also about the intensity. The more aggressive, the more intense we win that ball in that very moment, the more we take this intensity and this tempo into the counterattack. So that means the more intense we win the ball, the bigger the chance that we create from.
So that's Rangnick explaining just some of his philosophy. I suppose, Uli, the uncharitable point could be made that these ideas were once upon a time revolutionary, but now there's nothing new or special about these ideas. So has the world caught up in Rangnick, or do you still think he will have a lot to offer Manchester United as a coach?
Well, you know, you still have to put them into practice. And, you know, what I've seen from Manchester United in the last couple of months was that this has been some problem for them.
So
he could, you know, the interesting thing about him is not just that, of course, he's not been the caretaker manager, and but that he will probably stay on in some capacity at the club. And that has been his real forte, I must say, over the last couple of years. Being in a position or a capacity other than coach. I mean, he's a good coach, but I think he likes to be in a position where, you know, just one or two bad results won't mean you get fired. So where you can have, you know, some strategic aims and really build a club. And he has done that very well, which is also why I'm just bringing this up, because I'm not quite sure if, you know, from your opening words about the second coming of whoever, a savior figure at Manchester United.
Yeah.
I noticed that it's not become quite obvious that he is also a bit of a critical figure, Ralf Rangnick, you know? I mean, I now work for a magazine, a monthly football magazine, the biggest in Germany. And years ago, we did an interview with Ralf Rangnick, and it was the cover story. And the cover image was Rangnick, and the headline was, "Mr. Rangnick, are you ruining football?" And which was a quiz question we posed to him. He said no, of course, but he knew what we were getting at, because two of the teams that he formed, that he more or less created, are seen very critical in Germany, which are Hoffenheim and then RB Leipzig, you know, two of the clubs who are sort of, trying to work around the 50+1 rule, which is one of the cornerstones of the game here. So there are also people who say that he is a very, very good coach, but we don't really like the clubs very much that he's built.
Yeah. No, I understand, and we're aware of the 50+1 model and why it's so valued in Germany and why the likes of RB Leipzig are not popular. So you say there he's a very good coach, and possibly though even a better director of football, which may be ultimately where he can really have a long-term impact at Manchester United. I'm wondering though, for all his revolutionary ideas and, you know, the way he impressed with his punditry and made a name for himself, why did no bigger club take a chance on Rangnick? Because Manchester United are certainly the biggest club to have taken a chance on Rangnick. And this is the first time he will have managed. I know he was in Moscow as director of football, but this is the first time he'll have managed outside Germany. Yeah. Why did no Bayern Munich swoop in for a Rangnick along the way?
Well, he's certainly a man who can be difficult to work with, I would assume. Okay. He has a history of, you know, the fact that he's chosen many clubs which are run in a, well, should we say, in a sort of dictatorial manner. You know, he had total free reign at Hoffenheim because the club was then practically owned by a man and is now really owned. He had total free reign in Salzburg and Leipzig, you know, because the clubs are basically owned by a company. He had almost free reign at Hanover, which at the time was had a very, very headstrong chairman, right? So he was basically given the keys to the city. But in each case, he sooner or later clashed with somebody at the club, usually with those, you know, owners or chairman. So he has a bit of a history of that, which is certainly one thing why he's not been given a really, really top job. Another thing is that where he had been offered one, you know, it was interestingly enough, Jürgen Klinsmann offered Rangnick the job of assistant coach in 2004, which Rangnick declined, probably because he felt he wasn't assistant coach. And we can assume that Klinsmann would have driven him nuts, probably. But of course, it would have been a really, really good chance to sooner or later become the national manager himself. Yeah. So that was one opportunity he had. I've heard the story that Chelsea approached him before settling on Thomas Tuchel. So either everybody's trying to sign German-speaking coaches now, which, well, would open job opportunity for me, I think, along something down
Listen,
the line.
You guys are very fashionable right now. Yeah. Everybody wants you.
Well, and why so, are we?
Well, you just said, your style of football, I think, is dominant at the moment. What kind of personality then? So that's an interesting point, that he enjoys free reign and maybe doesn't like being told no. Now, he's not going to get total free reign at Manchester United, so that might set off some alarm bells for the future. But what kind of personality is he? What kind of man is he, would you say, Uli?
Yeah, well, I'd say, well, we've just heard his words about his style, you know, and I think he mentioned intense 5 or 6 times. And that's certainly part of his, I mean, that, of course, every top-level coach has to be a really intense personality. But let's not forget that Rangnick once had to quit a job because of a burnout syndrome, occupational burnout.
Yeah.
So that could be an indication that he's really, really intense. Mm. Another thing is that, which probably I've just sort of mentioned that in passing when I said that he sometimes tends to clash with other men with a big ego. Let's put it this way, which is because another moment that most people associate with Rangnick is when he was coaching Schalke for the first time. He had problems with the board and they were about to sack him and he knew that. And so after a game, and he knew he had a good standing with the fans. So after a game, he did not go into the dressing room with the team, but he circled the pitch, you know, and applauding the fans in the stands. And I think quite rightfully, Schalke's board considered that an affront, you know, sort of he was standing them up. And I think he later apologized for that because they had taken that the wrong way. But it was quite obvious the moment where he felt that, you know, he knew the game better than these people on Schalke's board. And that he had a better rapport with the fans. And he does have a big ego, but you need one. I mean, if you're the Manchester United manager, you have to have a big ego.
Well, he's going to need it.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
You don't produce a Kieran Kilkenny or an Oisin Mullen. You don't produce them overnight. They take time, takes a lot of work. Massive loss for his club, but he's made for professional sport.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
I have another clip here for you. So this is Rangnick talking about pressing. And I want you here to think about Cristiano Ronaldo, for instance, Uli, as you listen to this. So this is Rangnick talking about the absolute commitment he demands from every player in his team.
Now, I'm not talking about a little bit of this, a little bit of that, maybe a little bit of that, a little bit of pressing. I mean, come on, what is a little bit of pressing? A little bit of pressing is like a little bit of pregnant. I mean, either you are pregnant or not. Either you want to play pressing or not. But not, please, not a little bit of pressing.
So I don't think he's going to like Ronaldo's little bit of pregnant.
Yeah, could be. I think I may have mentioned that on the show before, or may have not. There was a couple of years ago, there was this very brief meeting between Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Jurgen Klopp, where they were both, you know, microphones caught their conversation, which is what we know about that. And Ibrahimovic was sort of saying to Klopp, why don't you call me? You know, I would love to play for you. You know, and Klopp replies, well, we can't afford your pay, we can't afford your wages. And then Ibrahimovic kind of said, I would play for free for you. And I always felt that most Dortmund fans who saw that were thinking, well, you wouldn't be in the team, Zlatan.
Yeah.
You know, you might come on with 10 minutes left if we really, really badly need a goal, but not a starting player in the Klopp team. And yeah, I think that's quite a popular conception, right, with regard to Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm. On the other hand, for all his antics, I mean, everybody who's ever met him or you know, worked with him will say that he's just totally committed. You know, he's the first man on the training pitch and the last man who leaves. So I do think he will make an effort to adapt. And I think Rangnick will make an effort to have him adapt.
Yes. Well, that's going to be fascinating.
I don't know.
Yeah. He does seem like a bit of fun as well there. I mean, you can't be a little bit pregnant. That was kind of a funny line. So he's got a personality as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, having said that, that thing about, you know, Hoffenheim and Leipzig and all those clubs, he sometimes comes across as somebody who's not unlike Guardiola in that he only thinks about the game as played between the lines, you know, as if he has no regard for, you know, what the fans in the stand think or a club's history or whatever. But I think that's wrong because in that interview, you probably know that he's a bit of an Anglophile, right? He studied English. No, you don't. He studied English. During his studies, he lived in England for a while. Right. He played for Southwick.
Right.
He always likes to tell the story of how he punctured his lung in, I think, his first or his second game and realized that, well, non-league football in England was not what he was used to from the south of Germany. But in that interview, where we were quite grilling him, I must say, he also said that as a young man, he was totally fascinated by the old Highbury. And he spoke about how he would actually not really follow the game, but watch the people in the stands, you know? Because if you see this old footage, you know, way before all Cedar Stadia, you've got these images of the entire stand moving as one person, you know, like I don't know, like a big swarm of fish or whatever. And he told us that he always wanted to go to England and watch the game at Highbury just to understand what it feels like to be a part of that, such a crowd. And he did that. So maybe very deep down there is some romantic.
Okay, good. That's plenty of romance. So you mentioned new edition of the book. I hadn't realized that. What's the title? Do you want to give it a little push there to the audience?
No. Well, it's toward the story of German football. I had to find a new publisher. And the new publisher, of course, said, well, it's a notebook, so we'll gladly bring it out, but you have to update it. And so I did. And of course, a key theme in the last couple of years in German football is this whole thing about fan ownership and, you know, and who runs clubs and how are they run. And so Rangnick always pops up in this new chapter somewhere, either as the man who takes Hoffenheim to the Bundesliga or the man who takes Leipzig to the Bundesliga.
On the side of evil. Well, we must chat to you about that sometime. Uli, always great to have you on. Thanks so much, and thanks for waiting patiently beforehand. Appreciate it.
Right. Joe, it was my pleasure.
Thank you. Cheers. Uli Hesse there.